Hello, my name is Karen Guglielmo, the Special Projects Editor for SearchCIO.com, and I'd like to welcome you to today's expert podcast on compliance and offshoring best practices for CIOs. I'm joined today by Khalid Karch, Principal Analyst with Forrester Research. He is a leading expert in security management, compliance, best practices, and services. Khalid's research focuses on helping organizations to make their information security programs more effective by aligning them to the business objectives while appropriately managing information security risks. He covers security strategy, metrics, reporting, and security service providers. He also advises clients on standards, industry and government regulations, and compliance. Khalid has co-developed Forrester's information security framework and assessment methodology. Prior to joining Forrester, Khalid worked on in the consulting and enterprise sectors. He has managed information security programs, security infrastructure, and control frameworks for enterprises in the healthcare and financial services sectors. Welcome, Khalid.
Hello, Karen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. And as I mentioned earlier, we're here today to talk about compliance and offshoring. And today's discussion will offer best practices for CIOs to meet and maintain compliance regulations when outsourcing offshore. So, Khalid, let's get started. What would you say is the biggest glitch CIOs face in offshoring? That's really also the most costly mistake.
Sure. So I think in having worked with several companies in the past few years and helping them align their offshore strategy, one thing that we've found consistently companies really fail to do is really setting the right accountability for their offshore provider. A lot of times we talk to CIOs and CISOs who are primarily responsible for ensuring the security aspects of and security and compliance aspects of the relationship, and we find that they have either relied too much on the offshore provider to really dictate what they are going to be accountable for and what they're not going to be accountable for, or they don't really have a very good idea of what really needs to happen at their end. How should they really ask the offshore provider in terms of what they should be looking for in terms of reports, in terms of metrics, in terms of service level agreements, and so on and so forth. And that's, I think, really the core of the issue that we find a lot of times. And what that leads to a lot of times, and as you said, most costly mistake, what that leads to a lot of times is the fact that in the end, there are either disputes or disagreements over what was expected and what was delivered and so on, or there are issues with respect to the clients really feeling that they aren't really getting the right level of support, and so there's this discontent and so on, and that really kind of is not good overall for the relationship and the trust, and I think that really leads to a much bigger issue. If you've got an issue with the trust between the two parties, then it becomes very, very hard to function. And so I think that one aspect, if you're able to ensure the right level of accountabilities by establishing the right security level agreements, service level agreements, right security, right compliance requirements up front, that really alleviates a lot of the issues that could expand into different areas and different problems later on.
So let's talk about personal data like patient or financial records. Is there really a compelling argument other than cost to send that confidential data offshore because of compliance regulations such as HIPAA and SOX?
Sure. It's actually interesting. I was working on a project lately, and the CFO was very concerned with the SOX implications of offshoring and stuff. And as we delved deeper into that project, we found that there wasn't really any information that was really that fell within the scope of SOX. And so there is, that really points to the fact that there is this whole kind of fear and uncertainty around what's going to happen with our regulatory compliance requirements as we offshore. What's going to happen in those environments, and what kind of implications do we need to consider and worry about, and so on and so forth. And the answer to that is, obviously, there are those issues that you need to worry about, and there are specific laws and regulations and mandates that you have to follow. But I think it's getting to a point where, as I talk to the offshore providers and as I see their quality and their processes and the way they function, I think that's almost becoming a non-issue. Other than the fact that, a regulation prohibits you from really taking the data outside the country. Other than that, I think there usually isn't an issue, or at least from our conversations and our assessment of the market, there usually isn't as big a deal in terms of SOX implications or HIPAA implications. All these service providers, offshore service providers, at least the large ones, have very reasonable controls that would enable them to comply to multiple compliance requirements simultaneously. And so as I was in India recently, and I visited a lot of these offshore providers, and I found that they've got actually stricter controls in a lot of cases than what you would normally have here in the U.S. companies. Having said all that, yes, there may be some cultural issues, some other issues that you may need to worry about and look at, but I think overall it's not really a big deal. And the second part of the question that you asked was, what are some of the other benefits other than cost that companies are taking up or are realizing as they kind of offshore or use these offshore providers? And there are definitely a few that I've come across. Cost is usually the driver that the companies use to build their case around offshoring. But I've found that competency is another issue. And the real issue is in talking to a lot of IT professionals, what we're finding is it's getting harder and harder to get the type of skill set that you need at the type of competitive environments that you're in, and you have to really kind of show your value and so on and so forth. And so for the right money, getting the right resources is becoming much harder, especially in the U.S. It's becoming an issue. And so you actually, if you're not able to fill that rec in the U.S., you can find maybe two or three resources having maybe more qualifications than the resource in the U.S. And kind of adding on or taking added work. And so that becomes a really key issue. The second thing that I've come across also is 24/7 support. I've come across several organizations that didn't really provide that service to their constituents before. And with this offshoring, because of the fact that you're able to leverage the time differences and so on and so forth, you're able to now provide a lot better service, or at least a 24/7 service as opposed to a 9-to-5 type of a service to your clients and to your customers within IT. The next thing, believe it or not, is compliance. And the reason I say that is, as I said, I mean, I find that a lot of, at least the larger offshore providers, do have reasonable and actually pretty good capabilities in some cases for complying to multiple regulatory, legal, even geographic or regional requirements that are laid onto to companies. And since they do this for many companies, they have a very good idea of what's expected and what kinds of controls they need to have in place. I think it definitely makes sense to do your due diligence as you're evaluating the offshore providers, but you do get additional kind of compliance competencies and additional compliance things that you may not really be able to do within U.S. And again, that becomes an essential element. The next thing is, I think more and more I'm finding the certifications or the standards such as ITIL and COBIT and quality certifications and all those things really being ingrained into the processes at these offshore providers. And what that does is ensures that there is a consistent level of service, consistent level of relationship that in that happens between the offshore provider and the company that's offshoring. And so I think having those established processes really helps with consistency, which again may not be possible, or the rigor of that consistency may not be possible in your own internal environment. So in general, I think cost still stays a pretty strong driver. But I've seen competency being argued as one of the key areas that could include increase with offshoring, 24/7 support or additional services, compliance, and then established processes really help with overall consistency of the IT tasks that are being performed within the environment.
Okay, I know you touched on due diligence. Could you offer some due diligence compliance tips for enterprise CIOs who are sending work offshore?
So let's talk about what are some of the due diligence steps that you could take. I think first and foremost, you need to hold the offshore providers accountable to the security, the privacy, the performance types of kind of service levels before you even kind of go through that process of really vetting the other parts of the environment. You need to set the stage. I've seen companies ask for external auditing reports, making sure that they're meeting the jurisdictional requirements, safe harbor certification. Again, you need to make sure that the offshore provider has reasonable controls if necessary. Automating the requirement process becomes important, where you're collecting a lot of the information from these offshore providers and sifting through that in a way that is going to give you a pretty clear picture. Because there are going to be a lot of caveats in terms of, yes, we can do all of this, but we can't do one, two, or three. And then you got to evaluate all the offshore providers in terms of how they can deliver to that service that you're expecting, and which one would be the best option to pick based on the caveats and the requirements that you've put forth. And as I said, I think it definitely helps to do your homework before asking for a service level from an offshore provider. You need to have a very clear and good idea about what are some of the expected things you need to get from your offshore service provider in terms of reporting and in terms of service level agreements. The other few things that I recommend our clients kind of do as they go through this process is be very specific in terms of who's responsible for what. I think I've seen a lot of times the ball being dropped when there is a security incident or there's some kind of a breach because there weren't established processes for handing off the incident or the process from one company to the other. So there needs to be very, very clear directions and understanding on who will do what and when. And that needs to be decided up front. That needs to be decided in terms of, are you going to take over that responsibility or not? You need to understand that up front. Having some kind of an assessment, and I've seen this in a lot of cases, is having some preliminary assessment of the capabilities, of the processes, of the overall environment of the company definitely helps. But again, you need to be able to narrow down a list to a handful of vendors, and then you need to go deeper into doing those assessments. I've seen some companies do actual physical, logical assessments once they select a list of, I'd say, the top five providers. They would go on site and do those assessments. They would go on site and understand what the local requirements and ramifications are, and so on and so forth. So again, those are things to keep in mind as you go through your due diligence.
Okay, and I actually have time for one more question. In your opinion, would you say is the impact of the slowing economy on outsourcing, specifically offshoring?
That's a very interesting one, and I get that all the time from our clients. And here's the interesting answer. The answer is actually the dollar value of the contracts for offshoring is remaining about the same. Although the U.S. dollar has been kind of declining in value and so on and so forth, and that has, again, some ramifications in terms of offshoring and the type of business and so on. But what we're seeing is the dollar value remaining pretty consistent, but the expectation from the companies now is that you should be able to deliver more from the same dollar value. So I don't think there is going to be a huge financial blow just because of the slowing of the economy, but I think there are going to be increased expectations from what you can get, and getting more bang from the buck is going to be kind of the trend that we're starting to see in terms of employing the offshore providers. So I think, I mean, we haven't really seen a significant decline in the revenues yet, but the expectations around the types of services and the scope of those services are changing slightly. And again, that may impact the bottom line because some of the offshore providers may need to hire additional resources and so on and so forth. But again, the revenues, we haven't really seen decline as much.
Okay. And on that note, that does conclude today's podcast. Thanks again to Khalid Karch for speaking with us today. And thank you all for listening. Have a great day.